Hello and welcome to Teaching Here and There, a new podcast that explores hybrid teaching in higher education. I'm Dominic Pates, a senior educational technologist at City University of London.
I'm Ivan Sikora, associate professor in aviation in University of West London.
And I'm James Rutherford, also work at City University in senior educational technology as well.
Part of the aim of this particular series is talking to some others that are exploring thinking, teaching and practicing in this new and emerging field. We've got hopefully lots of exciting guests lined up. But for today, we were delighted to be joined by two of our City colleagues, is Dr. Jane Secker and Dr. Rebecca Wells. So we're going to kick off with a conversation with the two of them, and then we will join you all at the end of that discussion and see how we went.
So joining us today, we have Dr. Jane Secker and Dr. Rebecca Wells, both working at City University. Thank you very much for joining us. If I could ask you first, Jane, just to introduce yourself before we start our discussion on hybrid teaching.
Yeah, so I'm Jane and I'm a senior lecturer in educational development, and I work in the academic team as part of LEAD at City University. I teach on the Masters in Academic Practice, and I look after the School of Arts and Social Sciences in terms of their educational development needs.
Thank you very much. And Rebecca, thank you for joining us. If you'd like to just give us a brief introduction.
Yeah, thanks, James. I'm Rebecca, and I'm a lecturer in food policy at City University London, and that's in the Centre for Food Policy. So I'm looking at all things, researching all things food and the sort of policies around food and how we provide food and how we can integrate between food and health and environment to make the food system better for everybody. And as part of that, I've also the programme director for the Masters in Food Policy. And I was also involved in a project called IFSTAR, which was Innovative Food Systems Teaching and Learning, catchy acronym, which is an experimental project which has now gone on to be a sort of fully blown program that City University were part of from the beginning, that tried to work together between five different universities, bringing together students from different disciplines and from different sites. So I think that's probably something I'll talk about during this session.
Excellent. Thank you both very much. And that leads us nicely into some questions, which Dom, I'll pass over to you.
Thanks very much, James. And Jane and Rebecca, it's delightful that you were able to join us in this conversation. Perhaps if we could kick off with thinking about the, you know, sort of setting the scene a little bit. A lot of forms of remote teaching that we're talking about we'll use web conferencing technologies for connecting with students, and whether that is mixed mode or hybrid or fully online. Could you tell us both a little bit more about your background in remote teaching and learning with the use of web conferencing with students? And I'll sort of go to Rebecca first. Perhaps you could tell us a little bit more about the IFSTAR project in this.
Yeah, so the IFSTAR project that City were part of for 3 years from 2015 to 2018 was a collaboration between different higher education institutions led by Oxford University. We had different students, all of them postgraduate students, looking at food in some way. So we had veterinary students from the Royal Veterinary College, we had crop scientists from Warwick University, we had geographers from Oxford University, we had our food policy students from City and a number of other students from different institutions. So it was a big mix, and we tried to bring those students together, and it wasn't always possible to bring them together physically, although we did do that as well. So we tried a number of different ways of communicating between the students. And in a way, it was a real sort of exciting time to develop different methods and see what worked and what worked between those students, what helped to kind of bring them together. and how we could do that. So we tried a number of different things. We had, sometimes we had students, a lecture given, say, at City, which was tuned into by students on other sites. So we had students from Oxford, a group of students in a lecture theatre in Oxford, a group of students in a lecture theatre in Reading, a group of students in a lecture theatre at Warwick, and they would tune in to the lecture that was being given at City. And it was something of a technological headache, as you can imagine, the stress of not only giving the lecture, but trying to work out whether we would come, we would actually be on air, as it were. It was very much like broadcasting. My background is in broadcasting, so it reminded me a lot of that, the kind of stress of actually making sure that the technical side of things worked as well. But we tried other things as well. We tried webinars. We tried having students, some students, all of us kind of coming together. It was a bit Eurovision. So we would have at the beginning of the year, all five institutions waving to each other and saying, hello from Warwick, this is us in Warwick, this is what we do. So rather than having one key lecturer that was being broadcast across five sites without really interaction from those other sites, we would have interaction between the sites. So students in Oxford could see and talk to students in Warwick. Students in City could see and talk to students in Oxford. And that was something that also was really interesting to see, and see what the pros and cons of some of that were. What were the good things that we could do with that, and what were the things that didn't work so well? So we tried a number of different platforms. We tried YouTube, where we would have a big lecture that was more of a kind of broadcast scenario, where people would type in their questions and anybody from anywhere could join and watch. So I think those different situations where some people are live in the room, some people watch afterwards, everything was recorded, so people were watching afterwards. A lot of it was synchronous, not so much asynchronous, but we did have some of that asynchronous stuff going on as well, which were more about chat rooms for students, discussion boards, forums, those kinds of things.
That's really interesting. Can I just come in there with another question and maybe put it over to Jane as well? Was it any time, was this talked as hybrid teaching?
No, actually not. And I think we weren't really thinking about it from the perspective of where does this fit? Where does this sit in the sort of frameworks? We were thinking about how can we use the technology to achieve what we want to achieve with this group of students, some of whom are disparate, some of whom are together. So we had three of the institutions were in London. Of the, I think I said there were five, but there were actually seven now I think of it. Three of them were in London. So quite often they would all want to come together in any way physically. Mm. So we had some in the room, some not in the room from different places. And we found out quite quickly whether that would cause an imbalance in terms of access. Mm. So the students that were distant, would they feel distant compared to those students that were in the room? So what could we do about that?
There's clearly an awful lot that has come up from your experience, and that's certainly the case now when so many people are looking at hybrid teaching. And I wonder, Jane, listening to Rebecca talk there, do you think one of the keys here is the interaction, how people interact and where they interact, given that hybrid teaching is going to be a necessity for a lot of people?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interaction is definitely really important. So just to tell you a bit about, I mean, my experience is teaching modules on digital education to mainly staff at City. And interestingly, that course was designed as a blended learning course. So primarily they were coming in for some teaching days, but they also had quite a lot of online activities that the cohort was meant to do. But I think it wasn't really till last year and the pandemic that the course really functioned as a true sort of online course, because obviously at that point nobody could come into class at all. And so many of the online activities actually really came into their own, and they probably worked far better than when we had some students, you know, or we had sessions that were held face to face.
So there's an interesting distinction to be made between blended and hybrid, isn't there?
Well, I think terminology in this area is very confused, actually. And it was one of the issues that Rebecca and I identified when we did a literature search. So we identified quite a lot of literature that is talking about hybrid teaching, but actually when you go into that, which I've been doing in the last few weeks, quite a lot of the articles are not, they're about blended learning, or they're about the shift to online and how to sort of develop a course that was face-to-face and have elements of it that are taught online. So they tend to be using HyFlex in the literature as the term that means having some students in the class and some joining online. There's such a range of models that are out there, I think, now.
And I think that's a really key point to make, and we must bring in Yvonne, because yeah. you've also got experience in this area, pre-COVID and post-COVID, haven't you?
Yeah, that's actually what I listen to this from Jane. What I see myself in this whole situation, being an academic and trying to take advantage of this approach, not doing preliminary literature research on this, and actually not trying to get to know what the names. You just need to do something. So I was thinking, Jane, when you mentioned this literature and when you mentioned a different type of names that people use for this type of approach, what do you see, and actually how do you see when now the university, they have to take maybe a systematic or more systemic approach to this particular thing? What do they have to focus on? Is it the space? Is it the technology? The types of session or something else? Would you have any particular way of thinking about this from the literature and from your practice itself?
I think they have to think about all those things, actually. But I think what seems to be clear from some of the literature I've been reading recently is the importance of group work. So one of the things I've noted in a lot of articles that claim to be talking about hybrid teaching, that essentially what they're talking about is that lectures are shifted online and that small group teaching or kind of group activities are held in person, because obviously in smaller numbers students can mix. And there seems to be sort of overwhelmingly a sense that the more transmission style of teaching that a lecture is has actually worked really well online. And, you know, I know some institutions are talking about whether they would ever go back to holding face-to-face large lectures, not just for health reasons, but I think because of all the issues of student convenience. Obviously what students want to maintain is the kind of the small group interaction. So there's a lot that's been written that claims to be about hybrid. When you get into it, it isn't. It's a different way of splitting things. So it's saying we'll make the more acquisition sort of style learning online, and we will shift the more interactive stuff or keep that face-to-face and have that online. Now, if you're talking about true hybrid or high flex, then actually what's really clear is that it is about getting the groups to work together. So if you've got some students online, you've got some in the class. I've been reading an article that's been quite a lot about the importance of mixing up those groups so that students get to know people who are working online. And what's really interesting there is that I think it is going to be quite a bit about how the lecturer is planning the learning activities, but also making sure, for example, all the students that come to class are going to have to bring a device with them, because they will need to be, for some of the articles I've read suggest the best way for even students to participate in class is to join the Zoom room and use breakout rooms in Zoom and do that using a device. Well, that creates quite different expectations. It puts quite a lot of pressure on the students who come to class to also have to take perhaps a bit more of an active role in their learning, and not just sit and talk to the people in the room, but they have to join in and participate online. And then quite often they have to act as the person that goes to the front of the actual physical classroom and reports back to the rest of the room. So some really interesting models, but it's certainly, you know, it's going to need a lot of I think planning and thought, and it's not just the case of saying, well, let's have a lecture and let's just allow some of the students to listen to the lecture while they happen to be remote. You know,
that's not
hybrid or high flex.
That's true. And I cannot agree more on this, because actually teaching myself in the last semester and coming towards the end of the semester in the class together with the people that I met for the first time, it was just a revelation to see faces. That was really good. But I have to say, even being keen on this particular type of teaching and actually starting early with Dominic on our blended learning for FLY at City itself, I can see actually that probably there's a lot of a burden, or maybe a lot of the importance on the side of the teacher or the instructor or the lecturer who has to be involved in the technology itself. So I think, Rebecca, you said you're working on the policy, food policy programs and in these types of teaching. Would you say that the lecturers are left at or on their own devices, so basically to get knowledgeable about the approach, or would you say that it's good to for the institution itself, for you as a program director, to think about even hourly paid lecturers who are not maybe in this type of profession for a long time to embrace this recent type of instructing that is going to stay with us for some time probably? What do you say, Rebecca?
Yeah, so I think it's a big shout out to the team at Leeds for the training. I did Jane's TEAP program and, you know, learned a huge amount from that. I think, you know, having that sort of continuous learning, I'm going to sign up for another module, even though I've pretty much finished my master's, I still want to do more. So I think having
Rebecca, can you just tell us what TEAP means, just for our audience?
I hope I'm going to get this right, Jane. The Technology Enabled Academic Practice. So, which was a module that did as part of the Masters in Academic Practice. So you can do a number of modules as a member of staff, and I think that's really valuable. So that's sort of, I suppose, continuing professional development, teaching you how to be a teacher. And technology is a huge part of that, and everybody should feel confident with that, whether you're doing a webinar or having to teach on Zoom. And obviously those kind of big shocks from things like COVID, where you're having to pivot from teaching basically face-to-face to suddenly teaching everything online requires quite a lot of resilience and change. But I mean, generally, we know that a lot of these technologies are coming in and new technologies are coming in, and so it's good to be on top of them so you're prepared. But I do think you're right to say that high flex or hybrid teaching in its true form, as Jane says, does require you to have some extra technical skills, you know, and perhaps an extra person in the room to manage the people that are online, or to manage, you know, facilitate some of the group work and to support you as a teacher. So I think all of that needs to be thought through, because it's a different way of teaching.
I can agree with that. And I have to say that when you see the students for the first time, it's revelation for them, it's revelation for you. And also I think it's again, knowing how to go about this technology, maybe even behind the scenes, as you said, the second person in the room, we learned that actually that in a very practical way with Dominic in our blended learning, that we need someone who is managing the backstage. James, what do you think about it?
Yes, that's a really, that's a key point. And at City University, we are looking at a model developed by Imperial College Business School, and it's quite appropriate for aviation studies, Ivan. They're calling them co-pilots. This concept of an undergraduate or a GTA assisting the academic in class with the technology, managing the tech, keeping an eye on the chat, bringing people in who may be struggling with technical issues. Don't forget you're on mute, and those famous instructions. I think is that something that you think might make this a better experience for people online, Jane and Rebecca?
Definitely. I think the technology, having access to that technology. So I think it starts a long time before you get in the classroom. You know, you might be in the classroom with another person, but a long way before that. So some of the discussions that we've been having with James are about what are the microphones that we might need to have in order to manage this situation. What are the, what are the screens that we need to have in the room? How do we, you know, what investment do we need to make in changing the rooms, the teaching rooms, so they can manage this, so that those students that are in the room and the students that are joining us on Zoom or Teams or whatever it might be, get the best experience. So I think having a co-pilot, I think, will help, and will help the students, will help the staff, particularly at the beginning when we're not used to it, but also having that investment earlier on in actually setting up the rooms and knowing what the tech is that you need.
Do you think this will be one of the key factors in how academic staff are prepared for teaching, Jane, when you're thinking about the research and the guidance that we are providing for staff?
In terms of having the co-pilot?
Or do you think there are more important factors to make this a better experience?
It's really important that they think very hard about why they're actually doing this, and then you know, how it will how the way that they're teaching at the moment will translate into this new format. Because I think if they go in thinking they can just kind of adapt what they're doing in a very minimal way, I would be concerned that it would have, you know, particularly I don't just think it's the students that are joining remotely that would struggle. My concern would be that the students who come in to the class may also really start to feel a bit resentful if they think, you know, well, I've made the effort, I'm here, and I'm not getting the kind of the amount of attention that I would expect to get for sort of this, you know, despite the fact, obviously, there's going to be lots of reasons why students might choose to join remotely. Sure. It's not just because they decide they don't want to, you know, get up and come into to City. But I do think, you know, there needs to be sort of decisions made. So some of the articles I've read are about students choosing which mode they're going to study in at the outset. So are you going to, you know, come in and study face to face, or are you going to use the online? And then as the tutor, that's going to really help you plan with a good sense of, you know, not that I've got 40 and half of them might turn up and half of them might not, or half of them might, or they might all end up being online.
Specifically, if you've got planned collaborative activities, some group work.
I mean,
if Yvonne, you've got experience of this in your teaching, haven't you?
Yeah, this is what I wanted just to check with Jane, coming from different institutions, actually probably different demographics of students. We might experience in different organizations, in different institutions, a different demographic that is attending our classes. Would you say that if we assume that everyone has access to online, would be a correct premise? Or we need really to think about diversity and how people are equipped to join our online session?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think I read an article just this afternoon, actually, that was saying that could hybrid or high flex be part of inclusive practice in terms of, you know, students who can't come into the campus for a whole range of reasons, and it's sort of broadening access to education, definitely. But I think that means even more so then, you know, you need to be looking at issues of accessibility and planning the activities, as you say, really well, so that you're taking into account students with other needs.
So just thinking about it, obviously there's been some fascinating perspectives there looking at students. Thinking about it from a teacher's perspective as well, and if I look at the story you told there, Rebecca, from IFSTEL, you know, I'd say that you had you must have had a certain attitude to risk and experimentation to be able to try these different things out. Jane, thinking about your experiences on the MA in academic practice, then that's you already had an approach to open practice and those sort of things as well. Do you think that there is a certain, you know, experimentation or openness is necessary from a teaching perspective to be able to make this kind of approach work? Or do you think it is there is a mainstream approach that could be taken? Maybe if I go to Rebecca first and then Jane for that one.
Yeah, so I think, to be frank, what we did with IFSTEL was the programme was voluntary for students, so it wasn't part of a programme. It wasn't assessed. They knew that it was an innovative approach that we were taking. And I think that allowed us more to take risks in a way that you know, and the freedom to do that was amazing. But I think it's slightly different when you have students that have come with expectations, certain expectations, and of what the course is going to deliver them. And I think it's important that, you know, they have expectations that we need to meet, that we, you know, that what's advertised for the programme. And I think what's going to be difficult this year for September is we're operating under these other uncertainties. We're not sure exactly what it's going to be like. And it means that there's a sort of the uncertainty plus risk is maybe not the best formula, perhaps, to go on with. You want some certainty and some sort of familiarity. We didn't have that kind of, you know, the uncertainty of the global pandemic and masks and all of those things, which I think puts a certain, you know, extra element of risk there that perhaps makes it more difficult at the moment.
So I simpler think, times.
Yeah, maybe. I think we want to be innovative and we want to experiment. And I think quite often where educational technology is concerned, people don't feel able to take risks and they don't feel supported to take risks. And that's one of the great things about LEAD and about being able to talk to other members of staff in the university and talk to students and get feedback. That sort of helps you feel supported to take those risks. I think it's necessary, but it feels difficult under these really uncertain conditions.
Yes, it's a really, really good point. And to quote George Osborne, we're all in it together. Jane, I'm just to wrap up, it's a really difficult question, but I'm going to throw it to you because I think you can answer this one. How do you see us traveling in the future, thinking about that flying metaphor? How do you think the future of hybrid deliveries is looking at the moment?
Well, I think one of the things about the pandemic and the shift to online has meant that people are much more willing to try out different things and to sort of persevere with technologies, to sort of realise that, you know, just because you try it once and it doesn't work doesn't mean you never teach an online class again. I think that is the nature of using technology, that it does require quite a bit of practice. I mean, if we all just walked up and gave our first lecture and thought, that's it, I've nailed it, I'm the best teacher in the world. Technology is just like any other thing that you need to practice, you need to test it out, you need to work out what you're doing. And with teaching, I think it's going to just give us a whole range of all other options. You know, the sort of model that many universities had stuck to, which is that students turn up on the campus and they get, you know, a couple of hours of lectures a week and a couple of hours of seminars, is really, you know, hasn't changed. People have been saying this, it hasn't changed for hundreds, thousands of years. And there are so many better ways that we can learn that give opportunities to all sorts of other people, you know, who've been excluded from education until now. So I'd like to see hybrid as one of a range of options that are available. I don't think it will suit all subjects and all ways of teaching, but I think it is something that does potentially offer something. I mean, people are still concerned. I think that's what I would say. So I think we do need more research in this area. That's really clear as well from doing a literature search, that there isn't, it's a lot of, even the studies that have been done, it's anecdotal evidence on very small numbers. So we've got to sort of do more research to work out whether this is actually something that helps. There's a lot to draw on, and there's a lot that technology can offer the world of education, more than just saying, you know, we're going to just stick lectures online. So yeah, you know, but I think it's the really kind of rich interactive group working sort of area where hybrid's got real potential for the future, and that's where I'd like to see it develop.
So I'm going to throw a final very, very quick fire question to both of you before we wrap up. Imagining a spectrum, when we first started talking about this podcast, we were tempted to call it fight or flight. So if you think about a spectrum where on one end you run away from this mode of teaching as quickly as you possibly can, and on the other end you run towards it and you embrace it. Where do you sit on that spectrum for your own teaching? Rebecca, then Jane.
Good question.
So I'm going to take a typical kind of pragmatic answer to that. I think it depends on the teaching. So I'm really, really looking forward to embracing it, because I've done some of this kind of teaching before. I know that we're going to have some really, you know, good specification rooms, that some great technology. I'm really looking forward to trying that out and seeing how it goes. But as Jane says, I know it's not going to work for every kind of teaching, and it's going to take some failures and some, you know, maybe some sessions that don't go so well before we get it right. So I'm embracing it, but with some caveats.
Good for you.
Fair enough. Yeah. Jane?
Good one, yeah.
I think in my own teaching, to be honest, I think I'm just embracing blended learning and sticking to, you know, the what's worked really well over the pandemic. And I won't be trying hybrid teaching for a whole range of reasons, but I think primarily because our cohort on the MA in academic practice really like the way we're teaching them. They've given us really positive feedback about the shift to online, and a lot of them don't want to come on the campus. We will experiment with some events where they can come together, but I don't think we'll be teaching the cohort you know, from the campus, with some coming in and some joining remotely. I think if we're going to do it online, we will be doing it fully online, you know, in as a sort of blended learning course.
Yeah, I think it's a great view from both sides. And of course, Jane and views from different perspectives. And for our listeners, this is the start of the journey. So basically, we are going to put in our podcast notes information about Rebecca's program that she mentioned. And of course, we invite you really for a good discussion after you listen to our podcast. And we, again, thank you, James and Dominic, for participating in our podcast today.
Thank you, Ivan. And yes, again, a big thank you to Jane and a big thank you to Rebecca.
So James, what did you make of our discussion today?
I thought that was fascinating. And the last question that we put to them, where do they see themselves on the spectrum of hybrid teaching in terms of fight or flight, was very interesting. And I think, Ivan, your insights through your own experience, I'm interested to know, where would you put yourself?
Well, I think it's very important to see how we are actually in the same boat, all of us. Talking to Jane, who is teaching in a program, I can see myself, and also with Rebecca, talking about her managing the technology and students in the same mix. It's really obvious that we have to think about these things. And I think rightly so, with the questions from Dominic, I think we have positioned ourselves in that particular spectrum. Dominic.
Absolutely. I think we will probably find ourselves, I'm probably at all points of the spectrum. There's one side of me that goes, oh my goodness, just run away from this. This is crazy. There's another part of me that goes, run towards the future. It's really exciting. There's all sorts of wonderful opportunities here.
At the same time, I think we are just exposed to so many technologies, and actually it's really tempting to say, let's try this. Just the other day, yeah. I tried Chinese Wuv, and I've been teaching for 10 days in Wuv. I don't know whether you're familiar with the material.
No, or you'll have to explain, Ivan.
So Wuv is something similar like Zoom, without limitation of the time, if you don't have a corporate account, with feature of a breakout rooms. Amazing tool. And actually, I just got exposed to it because I have been involved in this lecturing with the Nanjing University of Aeronautics and Astronautics. So technology is there. But the question is, as Jane had said, it is how much we know about the literature, how much we know about potential pitfalls, and actually how we can actually dodge them or avoid them in an efficient way.
Yes. So the analogy, just to finish off, is in terms of our flying analogy, is that once you've learned how to be a pilot, then the real fun starts.
So plenty of food for thought today.
Certainly looking forward to our next guest next month.
Indeed. And it's going to be really exciting to see who is going to be with us. And for you to know that, just join us.
You've been listening to Teaching Here and There, an exploration of hybrid teaching in higher education. This wraps up episode 1, and we will look forward to catching you again on episode 2. Thank you all very much.